Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Gab with the Gurus radio show, where you get entertained, educated, and motivated by top experts in a variety of fields, including health, fitness, the law of attraction, relationships, and social networking. Your host, Connie Bennett, is a speaker, certified life coach, certified health counselor, journalist, and author of the book, Sugar Shock. Learn about Connie at sugarshock.com. Now, here's Connie.
We are going to have such fun today. Today, we have two very, very different topics. You are going to get some wonderful tips on how to become happy from Gretchen Rubin, who is author of a fabulous book called The Happiness Project, or Why I Spent a Year Trying to Sing in the Morning, Clean My Closets, Fight Right, Read Aristotle, and Generally Have More Fun. And then, when we're done discussing happiness for the next half hour, we're going to talk about the power of music to help you to succeed in your endeavors. So let's begin first by telling you about Gretchen. Gretchen is author of several books, including the best-selling 40 Ways to Look at Winston Churchill and 40 Ways to Look at JFK. She actually began her career in law, and she was clerking for Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor when she realized she really wanted to be a writer, which she now is. This book, The Happiness Project, has been a bestseller, and it's an amazing project of hers. So, Gretchen, thank you so, so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So you have some really wonderful suggestions for ways to become happy. And one of my favorites, well, actually, I have a lot that are favorites, but one of the ones that intrigues me is sing in the morning.
Yes. Well, one of the things that I discovered in my research is that there's a very well-established psychological principle, which is that we think we act because of the way we feel, but often we feel because of the way we act. So you think that you're slamming doors and yelling because you're angry, but actually the fact that you're slamming doors and yelling makes you feel angrier. And so if you want to change the way you feel, you can act the way you wish you felt. And so, because I felt sort of low energy and crabby in the morning, I thought I would sing in the morning because that sort of signals that I feel lighthearted and energetic and kind of goofy. And so I try to sing every morning, and it really does, it's hard to feel crabby when you're singing, and so it does a lot to help me shift my mood the way I want it to be.
So what are your favorite songs to sing to?
Lately, I've been singing a lot of songs from the movie Willy Wonka. I don't know why, but, you know, I've Got a Golden Ticket is the Oompa Loompa song. I don't know why. I'll sing one song. They're usually sort of kid songs. And I'm a terrible singer. So, you know, my family thinks it's hilarious to hear me sing. So it's not like
a good
singer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you put on the music at the same time.
No, I don't, no. Actually, I don't like having music playing very much, which makes me unusual, I know. So I just sing a cappella.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love singing along with
then
music.
That's great, too, yeah.
In fact, that's what I miss about having a car.
Yes. All the chance to listen to music. Yeah, I know.
My favorite things to do would be to sit in the car, windows shut, and just sing at the top of my lungs along with some tune.
Yeah, karaoke, right? Car karaoke.
So how could singing in the morning help somebody who is breaking a habit, like, say, a sugar addiction?
You know, I think anytime you're trying to break a habit, the more mindful you can be about what you're doing and the more you can sort of take control of your mood and your actions, the better off you're going to be. And so if you feel like the morning is a time when you feel low energy and maybe you're looking for like a quick fix, doing things that would tend to give you other sources of energy might make it easier to overcome a habit. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is that self-control takes a kind of mental energy, and it gets depleted like other kinds of energy. And so when you're using energy to try to fight a habit, you need to either, you sort of account for that, either by boosting your energy and making sure that, like, you get enough sleep so you feel fully energized, or finding other ways to make sure that you are kind of offsetting the energy that you need to direct towards that self-regulation.
Interesting. So you also talk about, it's funny that you mentioned mindfulness, because that was going to be what I was going to ask you about. It was a very interesting chapter how you were resistant initially to learning meditation and all of that. But how can mindfulness and meditation help you, whether you're trying to break a habit or just become happier?
Well, you know, I never have tried meditation. That's something, you know, so it works for so many people, and so many people swear by it, and there's certainly a huge amount of research now that supports the idea that meditation has all sorts of positive effects on people, both for sort of spiritual reasons and then all like pure health reasons or emotional reasons. It's just something that had never attracted me. I just could not do it. But I think that mindfulness doesn't necessarily mean meditation, though they certainly are associated with each other. So by mindfulness, I mean more just like thinking about what you're doing and not being on automatic pilot. Because what I found is that most of my day was just running by routine, and I was sort of distracted and in my own head and a million miles away from whatever I was doing. And the more that I thought specifically about what I was doing, the more I was able to shape my actions and my behavior, my thinking, in a way that made me happier. So, and again, when you're trying to break a habit, all that is about shaping your routines. And there's sort of this idea floating around that you can make a habit in 21 days, but it turns out that's just not true. It depends a lot on what kind of person you are and what kind of habit it is. Because certainly a habit like getting a donut on the way to work is a habit that in 2 days you can have that habit because it's like, now you want that donut. And then a habit like going for a run every day before work might take a long time before it really became a habit. So I think the idea that like 21 days is some magic number, unfortunately, is not true. Sometimes it takes a lot longer, and sometimes it can happen a lot faster.
Now, you did talk about your intrigue with Zen koans.
Yes. Well, a koan is a statement that doesn't make sense logically. And so and Zen Buddhist monks would meditate on these koans to try to free themselves from rational thinking and sort of the boxes that rational thinking put you in. So one of the most famous one is what is the sound of one hand clapping, or what was your face before your parents were born? And so I realized that I had these koans in my I found myself thinking about all the time, and couldn't, it was sort of puzzling them over all the time. And it was only when I learned, kind of read about koans, that I realized that there was this value to it. So one of my favorite koans is from Samuel Johnson, who said, "He who would find the wealth of the Indies must carry the wealth of the Indies with him," which certainly seems not to be rationally true.
Would find the wealth of the Indies must carry the wealth of the Indies within
him. Yes, which I think, you know, when I think about it all the time still, and I think it's more that you can only find what you already have. You know, you're not, you know, you look for something outside yourself, but you have to bring it. You have to bring it. Bring it on. But it's a koan for me, because I do feel like I never exhaust, sort of, I never feel like I really have reached a final definition for myself about what that means. Or like Robert Frost said, the best way out is always through. And that's a sentence that seems to have a lot of significance in all different circumstances. I think about it in a lot of different ways. the best way out is always through. And and so it has a lot of meaning. So it was fun for me to look for these koans kind of in my own mental Rolodex of, I have a lot of quotations floating around my head. And so it was fun to, you know, doing these kind of exercises with yourself is very fun and very thought-provoking. So sort of looking.
So we are being mindful here.
Yep.
The best way out is always through. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in and of itself, that's very, very intriguing that you got into the koans as a way to move yourself into mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to tell you, I was very resistant to doing meditation for a while, but I have this really, really cool, it's a 10-minute meditation tape,
mm-hmm.
it's from Jon Kabat-Zinn.
Mm-hmm,
and the,
yeah.
He has the longer ones too, but
mm-hmm.
the 10-minute one, I'm like, you know, I can handle 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So just about every morning I listen to the 10-minute meditation from him, and it's like over before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I also found intriguing is that when you talk about mindfulness, you also talk about the role of keeping a food diary.
Mm-hmm. Which I never really did. I have tried so many times to keep a food diary. It is so challenging to keep a food diary.
I totally agree.
People recommend it all the time, and all of these great consequences come from it. And there's so much research showing that just, even if you're not dieting, but that just keeping a food diary helps
yes.
you make your habits. Because, again, it's mindfulness. It's like when you realize, like, oh, I just ate these M&Ms, and, oh, I just had that extra, you know, half of a bagel or whatever. When you realize what you're eating, you just are much more healthy-minded. But I just could not remember. I was like, I'm going to have to plaster my entire track through my day with post-it notes reminding me to do it, because I would do it in the morning when I always eat the same thing anyway, and then by the midday I would just not remember. Do you find the same thing? I'm like, how do all these people do it? I find it incredibly hard just to remember to do it.
Well, part of my I've come up with these fascinating ways of getting out of it, like what notebook am I going to use?
Yeah,
well,
oh,
where
yeah.
is
oh,
the
I
notebook?
Know that.
Now I can't find the notebook.
Yeah, I can't
but
find the
I
pen.
Have, I've
yeah.
got.
Yeah, it's always in the wrong corner of your house. No,
but
yeah.
I'm actually telling people to, recommending to people to keep a food diary. So I am seeking to walk my talk. So you know what? Even if I missed a day or two or three or whatever, even if I haven't been as consistent, well, I'll just start over.
Well, you know, I saw this little tiny notebook on a like on a keychain type thing that you could wear around your neck. Like I guess it's like if you wanted to just have a pad of paper around your neck. It's actually a really good idea. And now that you say that, maybe that's what I need. Is I need to walk around with it around my neck with like a pen stuck in my hair and behind my ear, and so I just have it with me 24/7. And maybe that's the ticket.
So what drew you to think about? Food diaries as a means to become happy.
I think wanting to eat more healthfully is one of those perennial. You know, it's. I mean, there are a significant number of people who really do, you know, have excellent eating habits. I am not one of them. I would say I have okay eating habits, and it was just something that was. I just saw over and over again people saying like, "Oh, this is a great thing that just sort of automatically makes you healthier." And it's certainly true that more and more research is showing that what you eat has a huge influence on your health.
Well, that's
you're much better off getting all your nutrients from actual real food rather than from additives
yeah.
or vitamins or whatever. Like, just eat a salad.
Yeah, that's my pet.
Yeah,
pet,
and
project,
so I wanted to do it. But now, you know, just talking to you about it has given me new enthusiasm. I'm gonna try the food journal again. You know it works when you do it. So I'm gonna try it again. You've given me the zap.
I'll send you something that I had worked up, because what I tried to do in my food journal is not just talk about food, but talk about exercise, all of that. Anyhow, so of all the things that you recommend to people to do to lift their spirits, so that they don't feel inclined to turn to negative, I shouldn't say negative, to turn to self-destructive activities. What do you think are the most popular or the best things to do?
This sounds so obvious, but I really think that it's important to start by getting enough sleep. Because I've just become a huge sleep zealot. Because it's so easy to think of happiness as like this abstract, transcendent thing that's very complicated. But your body will always, your physical experience is always going to influence your emotional experience. And so many people that I know where they're like, oh, I'm so blue or I'm overwhelmed or I can't handle this or I can't handle that. I'm like, how many hours of sleep do you get? And they're like, oh, 5.5. I'm like, this is not enough sleep for a person to get. And it just, you sort of adjust to not having enough sleep so you don't realize how underslept you are. But I feel like I am so much more vigilant now about getting enough sleep. And I feel like it just has brought, like it just took me up a notch without anything else. Because when you have enough sleep, it says you have more energy and you just have more of that stamina to do all the other things that make you happier, like breaking bad habits or sticking to good habits like exercising that maybe you don't want, or calling a friend or organizing a party or all the millions of things that you might do that would make you happier but that take a little bit of extra energy. Because when you're tired, all you want to do is flop down and watch television, you know, and that's like not the route to perpetual happiness. And so, I mean, I think that's one thing. Another thing that has that really surprised me, and I'm not saying, and because it doesn't seem like it should matter as much as it does, and that is the degree to which, for most people, outer order contributes to inner calm. And I completely acknowledge that in the context of a happy life, something like a messy coat closet is trivial. And yet, in my experience, and from what other people say to me, it seems like people get a disproportionate boost from things like cleaning out their desk, cleaning out their car, cleaning out a closet, organizing a medicine cabinet. There's something about getting control over this outer environment that gives people a feeling of calm and cheer. And you can kind of self-medicate through cleaning out your underwear drawer because there's something about it that, again, and I think it's disproportionate because having control over your stuff does not mean that you have control over your life. It's kind of an irrational sense. And yet, over and over, people have said to me, like, I feel so great. Or, you know, or people say things like, you know, I had a dinner party and I took everybody to see my closet in my bedroom. Or, you know, I mean, they have such a feeling of pride and relief. And then a lot of times you give things away, so there's the good feeling of putting things to better use, you know, giving things like coats and clothes to people who can really use them, or children's books or toys or whatever, giving them to people who can use them, getting rid of trash, getting rid of things that don't work, finding things. You know, when you get put everything in order, then you're like, oh, that's where that hammer is. You know, so that surprised me. It surprised me how much it seems to cheer people up.
That's interesting. I love this comment of yours that cleaning out your underwear drawer can be a way to self-medicate.
No, but I mean, it's funny, but it you know, I thought it was sort of just me, but people over and over, the number one resolution, when I talk to people about, you know, when people run up to me and say, I did a happiness project, or I've tried these things, and I always say, well, what have you tried? And it's like a million different things. It's so fascinating. But the one resolution that comes up over and over again, the number one resolution that is specifically mentioned to me, and again, I would not, this is not what I would predict or what I would say is the most helpful resolution, but the most popular resolution as like the gateway drug to a happiness project is make your bed.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah.
So many people say, I make my bed and it's made me so much happier. It, again, it doesn't seem like it should matter that much. And yet, for some reason, it does seem to help people be happier.
I love it. Talk to me about the role, because I'm really big on this too. And in fact, I tell people, so when I coach people like to break free of their sugar addiction, in fact, I even use the same language as you, which is pursue your passion. So you say pursue a passion. Talk about the role of that.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me is that as adults, a lot of us have kind of lost touch with what it is we would do for fun or what our natural inclinations and interests are. And I think you spend so much time thinking about what other people find fun or what you wish you found fun or what other people think you ought to find fun that you sort of lose track of what it is that you find fun. And so getting back in touch with that and making time and space in your life for it could be a huge source of happiness. Now, it's interesting about the word passion because Dan Pink, who's a writer who I love his writing, he wrote something very interesting about how he doesn't use the word passion because he thinks that people kind of think, oh, my gosh, I don't have a passion, and then they feel like a failure, like they don't have a passion because that's like such a high bar. So he doesn't even use the word passion. So maybe, you know, it's like maybe you don't have to say it's a passion, but, you know, it's like, well, maybe you've always wanted to learn this, or maybe you're interested in this, and spend time in it. One thing that I found is a really helpful question for people who don't know what they're interested in or what their passion might be or what their interest might be, if it's not a passion, is to say, well, what did you like to do for fun when you were 10 years old? Mm-hmm. Because probably what you like to do as a 10-year-old is something that you would like to do now in its appropriate form for an adult. So if you like to go bike riding, if you like to walk in the woods, if you like to make things with your hands, you know, all these things are things that adults can do in different ways. And so it's a good thing. If you can't connect with it in your present, maybe there is a clue to what your passion would be in your past. Now, in my case, I was sort of hiding a passion for myself because it didn't fit with my idea of who I wanted to be. So my passion was...
You're talking about novel writing?
Well, children's literature. I love children's literature and young adult literature. But mm-hmm. I never really talked about it with anyone because I wanted to present myself as a very adult, sophisticated, you know, educated person, and I thought that was sort of childish. But then I realized, you know, I don't have so many passions in my life that I can ignore one. And so I really made room in my life for this passion, which has turned into kind of a very big part of my life, which is a huge engine of happiness for me, with all these new friends and new books and new kind of experiences that come out of it. And but I had to sort of make room for it. Because
where did you meet the new friends?
Well, the thing that was funny is that when I started asking around, it turned out that I already knew a lot of people who love children's literature, but nobody really ever talked about it. But once I said, I'm starting a children's literature reading group, would you like to join? I mean, I got people to join, and then I had a few friends join, and then they invited their friends. And so one of the best ways to make yourself happier is to strengthen existing relationships and make new relationships. So these children's literature reading groups, wholly apart from the pleasure of the literature, which I loved, I had better friends and new friends, all in a social network of people who liked something that I liked and wanted to
people
talk about.
People who share your passion.
Yeah, and so it's just been this fabulous source of fun and energy, and it turns out these people are all very bookish people, so it's actually sort of professionally helpful to me. And because I'm part of a social network, it feels, you know, like a real group of friends, not like a bunch of singleton friends that are sort of hard to manage. So it's sort of an efficient way to see a lot of people. It sounds funny to talk about efficiency in the context of friendship, but if you're really, really busy, it's very helpful if you can see a bunch of people at one time because then you can see them and be friends with them and stay up to date and connect, but it's like you don't have to have coffee with 12 different people, which is not, you know, you just can't. Most people just don't have time to manage a wide circle of friends in a very, you know, one-on-one kind of way. So So just making room for that passion ended up being something that led to more happiness for me in all different kinds of ways.
Interesting. I have a couple of new passions, actually. It's funny thinking about this. So you're talking about your children's groups. I've gotten into Zumba.
Oh,
and
what?
I've become quite, I don't know, is fanatical the right word or not?
I don't even know what Zumba is. What is Zumba?
It's a type of, it's a Latin-inspired dance. It is like, well, I will send you information. It is like the most fun. And then I was sort of like you doing a little bit of research. And then I've also become a fan recently of something called Masala Bhangra, which is another type of dance.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Indian-inspired, but it's from this woman, and she combined – she was actually on my radio show yesterday. But anyhow, I just got them both on my mind.
But that's great.
But
see, there that's also like exercise and activity. And
yes, it is.
Sure, it's, you know, exuberant and fun and – you know, that's great, something like
but
that.
But you just made me think about it when you were talking about your children's literature, because I've been thinking about, you know, I now have all these new Zumba friends.
Yes, it's so fun. I mean, this is one reason I think why people also like getting dogs, because everybody I know who has, or maybe this is a phenomenon in New York City where I live, where people go to dog parks, but people meet a lot of friends through their dogs. And so you have a dog, but then you have all these new pals, too. So
that's funny. Of all the things that you, because you explored so many different topics over the course of a year, what has surprised you the most, other than the make your bed, which I just love?
Yeah. I think the thing where I really changed my mind, where I was surprised to the extent that I, like, altered my opinion 180 degrees, was I had read a lot of research that said that novelty and challenge make people happier. The people that do new things, like go to new countries or even new restaurants, are happier than people who stick to the familiar, and the people who challenge themselves and learn new things were happier. And so for my book, because the whole sort of theory of my book is that I test drive all these theories, is I needed to test that. I really did not think that would be true for me. I thought, I don't like to travel. I eat the same food all the time. I like to do very few things, and I do them all the time. I thought that for me, I was the kind of person where familiarity and mastery made me happy, and that novelty and challenge would not be a source of happiness for me. And so I went into it, you know, with sort of this spirit of scientific inquiry, but I thought that I knew how it would turn out. And in fact, and so the thing that I did to challenge myself was to start a blog, which was something that was very challenging and intimidating to me. I did not read blogs. I had never written. I'd never been a journalist. I'm not technically savvy. Like, everything about it was very uncomfortable and challenging to me. And, you know, I thought I would try, like, my food journal and do it for a month and see if it worked, and then abandon it if it didn't.
And now your blog has become huge, popular site.
And so I am a complete believer in the idea that – so something that really surprised me is I think it's absolutely true that novelty and challenge – just like you with your dancing. It's like you learn – first of all, you learn about something you didn't even know existed. Then you get good at it, and then you want to get better and better. And then, like, pretty soon you're going to another country to go to some big festival. You know, it's like –
ooh, that sounds fun.
Novelty and challenge,
huh?
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that surprised you.
Yeah. I was surprised by, because the thing about novelty and challenge is they often come with a lot of uncomfortable feelings. So it's not always fun right away. So my blog, even today, is a big source of anxiety and frustration and anger and feeling stupid and you know,
you wouldn't ever know it though.
Oh, well, that's nice. But it is. But I mean, but that's one of the reasons why it's fun, is because I'm like, you know, can't do something, can't do it. Then I get it right. And then I have that feeling of, like, you know, achievement and success and learning. And I have this whole new identity, you know, as a blogger that I never expected to have and would never have predicted for myself. So I think novelty and challenge can, but I don't think you can just, I mean, sometimes people are like, okay, well, fine, what should I do, learn Italian? I'm like, well, you have to pick something that is right for you with your temperament.
That calls
and your,
out to you.
Yeah. I mean, Zumba would not be something for me, I don't think, but it's the right thing for you.
I didn't think it was for me. That was kind of interesting.
Well, so it's hard to
know. Like you, I've sort of had to do, you know, take sort of a, well, like, if I'm going to talk about these things, you know, if I'm ever going to write about these, I have to test them all out.
Yeah.
I have to test drive them.
Yeah. I mean,
and then lo and behold, it's like, oh, wow, I really like this.
I like this, yeah. I think a lot of people, though, have something in their mind that has appealed to them but that they have never really embraced. I mean, I don't think that you have to pick something, because sometimes people are like, well, pick something that's scary you know, and maybe you'll love it. But I'm like, you know, pick something that you've always secretly kind of wanted to do. Like, some people, like, secretly have always wanted to train for the marathon. And I secretly, one of the things I did is I wrote a novel in a month. The minute somebody told me about, oh, there's this book about how to write a novel in a month, I was like, I want to do that. Now, other people are, when I tell them about it, they're like, ooh, I want to do it too. Or they're like, that's my idea. That's like my worst nightmare. You know, it's the kind of thing where it appeals to you or not. And so I think deep in your heart, you know,
right,
you have this sense like, oh, I have always wanted to learn how to do oil painting, or, oh, I always have wanted to, you know, learn more about botany. You know, somebody on my blog was saying how for fun he met with these people and they did Latin translations. I mean, you never could predict. I just saw a guy yesterday, he was taking Korean. He's like, this is what I'm doing for my happiness project. I'm taking Korean. You know, it's, you can't predict what,
yeah,
for somebody
whatever
else will be the right
whatever
thing.
Works for you.
Yeah, and so you have, really have to look within yourself and say, what's the right goal for me? I can't just pick it randomly. I have to pick something that is going to resonate.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, what about for people who are seeking to break some kind of a habit, like a sugar habit or something?
Well, you know, breaking a habit is very, very challenging. I think a good thing to keep in mind is this idea that you can deplete yourself. And so if you're going to really put, you know, maybe if you're going to try to kick a bad habit, make sure, sometimes people get very psyched up. Like, I think this happens a lot around New Year's, or maybe around,
yeah,
like in preparation for like a you know, a big event, like a reunion or a wedding or something like that. And you think, okay, I'm going to do a million different things. I'm going to start exercising, and I'm going to diet, and I'm going to do all these million things at once. And you, it's sort of like it all breaks down. So maybe to sort of think about, okay, I'm going to pick one thing and really think about what are the many, many steps. And I think the more you can break it down into very concrete, manageable things that you can hold yourself accountable for. So something like, I want to eat more healthfully is too vague. You have to say, instead of having toast with jam in the morning, or instead of having a donut in the morning, I'm going to have cereal with fruit. You know, like, be very, very specific with your expectations. Instead of having candy at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I am going to have X. You know, instead, you know, into, so you really are very specific with what you're asking. Because I think the more vague something is, the more you don't know whether you're sticking to it or not.
Yeah, yeah. So, Gretchen, really, really appreciate you coming on the show. Do you have any final thoughts on how people can become happy, or how people can break, you know, a bad habit?
You know, I think it's back to this, what we were talking about before, mindfulness. I mean, there's sort of a strong strand of thinking within happiness that if you try to be happier specifically, you kind of get in your own way, and that you're better off not pursuing it directly. But in my experience, like, we're always more likely to hit a target when we aim right at it. And so if you ask yourself, how could I be happier? What could I change in my life? The more specifically you can bring about those changes. And so, if some, like, a lot of times something that makes people unhappy is feeling out of control in some area of their life, like feeling like they're not in control of their eating, or they're not in control of their body, or they're not in control of their time or their possessions or anything. And so by really focusing in on that and saying, mm-hmm, what could I do differently? How could I change this very specifically? I think you really can make changes that can make you happier.
Awesome. One last question. There were so many things that you did over the course of that year. Have you stuck to all of them now?
Just about, and I have many, many more too. yeah. I mean, I have. There's a few. Like, I gave up hypnosis right away, and I resolved to write a novel in a month, and I did. So I am no longer writing a novel every month. I just did that one time. But for the most part, almost all the resolutions are things that I really will probably be on my list every day of my life for the rest of my life, because they really do make me happier.
Awesome. Well, Gretchen, really, really appreciate your time. That was Gretchen Rubin and her book, The Happiness Project, or Why I Spent a Year Trying to Sing in the Morning, Clean My Closets, Fight Right, Read Aristotle, and Generally Have More Fun, is now in paperback. That was a long sentence.
I know. It's a long subtitle. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Look forward to being in touch, and I'm supposed to get you some information, so you'll hear from me soon.
Excellent. I look forward
to
that.
So we are now going to move and switch gears and talk about music. We actually began our talk with Gretchen in the same way we talked about singing in the morning. But we are now going to talk with Paul Hoffman, who is a person who has helped people to inspire people with his music. He uses music to empower and motivate listeners to wake up to who they are and take action in their lives. And his music can elevate your mind and open your heart to show the way for seemingly impossibilities to become possible. And Paul, in particular, excels at merging music with enlightened consciousness to create success. And in fact, his success songs have inspired thousands worldwide to create powerful moments in their day. And Paul's clients, actually, in the personal empowerment arena, have been the who's who of big names: Jack Canfield, T. Harv Eker, Mark Victor Hansen, Robert Allen, Chris and Janet Atwood, Cynthia Kersey, Paul Sheely, Marcy Shymoff, John Azaraf, Alex Mendozian. These are a lot of people I've had on my radio show, actually. Lisa Nichols and Laura Langemeyer. Anyhow, Paul is also passionate about sound healing, and he co-authored this widely acclaimed Sonic Access Program with Paul Sheely for Learning Strategies Corporation. I actually have that, I believe. So without further ado, Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Connie. How are you?
I am really, really good. How are you?
Good. I am nothing short of phenomenal.
So, I wanted to have you on the show because I would like you to share with our listeners what is it about songs. And I imagine you didn't hear the beginning part of our program, my first part of this program with Gretchen. And she's written a book called The Happiness Project, and she was talking about she basically spent a year test driving all these various techniques. And one of the things that she said she does is she sings in the morning, even if she's not feeling like she wants to. But I've become very intrigued by this whole idea of using music to move you to succeed and using music to help you actually to break your bad habits as well.
Absolutely.
What is it about music that can change our lives?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it, and I want to acknowledge you for the great work that you're doing and for bringing information to people to help them transform their lives. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
You know, music is interesting, Connie. Music is a universal language. And, you know, so I started from there. You know, everybody likes some form of music.
Hmm.
No matter where you are in the world, no matter where you are in your day, you know, people always will gravitate to some form of music, whether it be, you know, rock and roll, classical, world music, whatever it might be. And, you know, you can probably remember, as I can, and I'm sure your listeners can too, is, you know, as we were growing up and there was certain moments in our lives, such as, you know, maybe our first date, our first love, or those who have been married, they've all had a song that has been very special to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when they hear that song, it actually changes their physiology. It actually changes their mental state, and it brings them back into, for instance, if you had a special song when you were married, I obviously would bring you back to the time when you got married and what a beautiful moment that was in your life. And you know, the brain stores all the memories. Everything that that's happened in your life is stored in your brain. And so the brain pulls up those memories. And so music has a really distinct ability to enforce memory. And so what I like to look at was when I write specific songs is, you know, I came out of the advertising world many years ago. I was one of the top commercial music writers for a long, long time. I wrote a little ditty called "Have You Driven a Ford Lately?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which probably some people remember, and some people can't get it out of their head. And when I say that to people, Connie, I say, well, I love this little ditty called Happy German Ford Lady. You know, 9 out of 10 people will sing it back.
Like, oh, I remember that. I was doing XYZ.
Exactly. And so you can see that music has that ability to create a reaction based on a memory. So I just know that being able to use music as a teaching tool and being able to use music as an inspirational tool is something that I think is a medium that really has a universal appeal to it. And so that's kind of how I look. And so was her name Gretchen?
Gretchen, yes.
So when Gretchen talks about, singing in the shower or what have you, probably, 99% of the people that are listening to the show have sang in the shower, probably 100%. The 1% won't admit it, but have sang in the shower. And what that does...
I don't know if she was singing in the shower, but she was singing in the morning. But
whatever it might be. Walking your dog, in the shower, in the car.
In the shower.
It doesn't really matter. See, everybody has a voice, and when you get to connect to that voice, then again, as I say, your physiology changes, your mental state changes, and you can become much more happy. You can become much more productive. You can become much more in tune with your internal and inner calling.
And more productive and happy too. Interesting. How do you think a person could use music to break a bad habit? And I'm sort of thinking about one of my favorite topics, which is to break a sugar addiction.
Well, I actually caught the last few moments of your interview with Gretchen. You guys were talking about habits. We all create habits, Connie, sugar included. The way we've grown up and the way we've been exposed to things and sometimes what happens is now habits become unconscious. And so the way music, the way I encourage people to use music, especially with my success songs, is that the songs have a specific energy to them. They have a specific message as well. And so when you get to the way that I know about breaking a habit, and I teach this, is you've got to, there's this thing called a positive feedback loop. And a positive feedback loop is basically, very simply, you must be present to all the things that you're doing that work for you, that bring you joy, that bring you happiness, that bring you success, and keep doing more of those. And the way you know that they're working for you is you get positive messages through that, because you find yourself being more happy, you find yourself being more productive. Then on the converse of that is there's the positive feedback loop will also give you information about what's not working, which means you won't feel as good. And so those are things that you don't want to do anymore. So with my music and my songs, I'm targeting, if you will, the mindset of people so that they're really hearing. They're hearing through the music. They're hearing through the lyric. They're hearing, actually, the energetic vibration that they want to create from. And so if you're in a procrastination mode, then you might listen to one of my songs. This is called Today's the Day, which actually talks about how you can make each day the best day of your life. And so the message is, the more you listen to it, the more you'll create a new habit. So the more that you realize that, okay, if you've got this belief that you, or this desire for you to stop eating sugar, or, and I support you on that, Connie, 100%.
Thanks.
And thank you for your work in that area. So the way that you're going to stop eating sugar is, first of all, you got to make the decision to stop eating sugar. It always happens with a choice, And I would ascribe to the fact that it's not that hard to break a habit once you decide to do it. because you know you just need to draw on the feelings that you have when you do it. First of all, the reason that you want to stop eating sugar, or the reason that you might want to have made that decision, that or any other habit, is because the habit has gotten to the point now where it's now running your life. And you want to be able to break that. And one of the ways, again, as I say, is through listening to music. It's not even only just music. I mean, it's like, you know, anything, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, your inner reality creates your outer circumstance. So, by that I mean, whatever you're putting internally into your body, okay, whether it be food, whatever you drink, what you watch, what you listen to, what you read, all has a vibration associated with it. And if you want to create a specific vibration in your life, then what you need to do is you need to be able to surround yourself with the information that supports that vibration. And music is an easy and pleasurable way to do that.
Now, you have composed like probably hundreds of tunes or thousands, who knows, at this stage of the game. What do you think of all the tunes that you've created over the years are the ones that really, do you have like, it's like asking somebody to name their favorite child.
Right, exactly.
I'm not sure I want to put
songs?
You on this spot, but
do I have favorite songs?
Yeah,
you know, I there's a few songs that I've written that I like more than others, only because you know they speak to me more. You see, that's another thing about music. And as I said when we first started, you know, everyone has a specific thing that they gravitate to, and you know, in music, and so although I've written many, many songs for many, many people, as you've mentioned, and you know, one of the things that Success Songs is about is, you know, aside from, you know, music, I'm a trainer, coach, and speaker. You know, the music that I write are really my teachings, my personal development teachings, but the music, which is an interesting way to deliver them. You know, some songs that I like, you know, I mean, I wrote a song for Harv Eker called I've Got a Millionaire Mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a very powerful song that doesn't take you to the fact that, you know, oh, I need to make $1 million, but it takes you to the consciousness that you have an infinite mind and you can do anything that you want to do. That's one of my favorite songs. Another one of my favorite songs that I've written is a song called The World is Calling, which is a song that's about being able to make a difference in the world. Because, you know, everybody wants to make a difference. Everybody has a higher calling and a higher purpose. Mm-hmm. And rather than go through your day as an automaton or as a robot, you know, if you are able to make a difference and bring happiness and joy to others and to really be of service, you know, your mind will go to ways for you to continue to do that. So The World is Calling, you know, I've Got a Millionaire in Mind. I wrote a song called It's My Time, which is kind of like a very anthemic song where you know, that's a song I give away on my website, Connie, and you know, I get more comments about how that song has really transformed people's lives. Cause
so tell people how they can get that.
If they go to www.successsongs, SuccessSongs.com, so there's three S's in the middle, you just go to the website, and if you give me your email address, and you know, I'll send you the song. And then, you know, I do a lot of other things in support of the music, you know, affirmations and things like that. But again, that song is the kind of song that if you listen to that song, you know, they say it takes 21 days to break a habit. You've probably heard that, right, Connie?
Yeah, we actually talked about it earlier, and Gretchen was refuting that, but I actually, I kind of like it.
Yeah, I, and you know, so if you listen to that song every day, your consciousness will change.
Which song was this again?
It's called "It's My Time."
Oh, okay, right. Of course, yeah.
And again, that's a free song that people can go and download. The thing is, it's interesting about how people get to transform their life. You know, the studies have been done that say that, you know, people usually give up after trying something 3 to 5 times. So
mm-hmm.
let's take sugar for example, because this is your show and I am in support of you, you know, educating people on the evils of sugar. You know, obesity is such a huge problem in this country and in the world, but especially this country. And you know, there's so many other alternatives for you to you know, put in your body than sugar. So, you know, they say people give up 3 to 5 times when they try something. So, you know, I can remember when I started to learn to play guitar. You know, if I didn't get it after the first or second time, you know, I would make up all these freaking excuses about why I couldn't play guitar.
Hmm.
When the bottom line is, it's really about a practice, and it's really about a ritual. And the way you're going to create a new habit is to continually do the new thing that you want to do over and over and over again, so it overrides the old habit.
Hmm. Good
you
point.
Know? And so that's the way... I mean, that's what it takes. And you know, rather than go, it's just like whatever, blah, blah, you know, if you really want to make a change in your life, then you've got to continually do the same thing over and over again. So, as I say, you get to build up that new muscle, the new muscle memory in you to be able to create that new habit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, music can do that. Again, you know, doing things that you know bring you joy and make you feel good. You know, I mean, sugar might make you feel good the first time you have it, but trust me, after a while, you know, it's like look at the waist. You don't have energy. You know,
yep.
You know, you blah blah. You know, so the effect of it is actually, you know, creating dis-ease and sometimes a disease, you know, in your body.
Right. Do you care to just talk about, I know you had overcome a challenge yourself at one point.
I did. You know, I'm sober 22 years. And so I had a terrific drug and alcohol addiction. And, you know, and I look at it today
22
like...
22 years is really, really impressive.
Well, thank you. And I look at it like...
Congratulations. Wow.
Thank you. I look at my addiction, Connie. And I would encourage the listeners to look at any addiction as an opportunity, not as a stumbling block in your life, but as an opportunity for you to take a mindful look at what you're doing in your life that's not working. Now, having a drug and alcohol problem for all those years, I was very successful. I was very functioning, but I was miserable. And so, you know, there just came a point in my life where I had to make a choice. Either I was gonna handle my addiction, or I was gonna die. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the few, you know, that made that healthy transition, if you will. And so, you know, again, I would encourage.
What did it take for you? I'm sorry.
To do it? Go ahead.
What did it take for you to, like, make that first step and stick with it?
Well, again, you know, I was...
Because anybody, I'm thinking, I'm asking this question for anybody who's suffering any kind of addiction.
Right. Well, the first step was I really, you know, I had to look at my life from the place of, you know, what was I really doing with you know, how I was behaving, and how I was behaving was totally... detrimental to the what I wanted to achieve in my life. But as I said earlier, I was at the point where if I continued to drink and use drugs, I was going to die. Period. And you know, and that was confirmed by doctors and people when I went to rehab. And you know, the same thing happens with if you have, you know, thoughts of being less than or whatever, sometimes those can lead to you know, things like suicide or whatever it might be. See, you know, you have the ability to think. I tell people you have the ability to create your life the way you want it to look like. But that has to happen by the thoughts you think and how you make the choices that will bring you to where you want to be in your life. And again, if you're you know, talking about sugar again, you know, sugar, you know, diabetes, what have you. So, again, you know, I was very fortunate because, what was staring me in the face, if I didn't get sober, Connie, what was staring me in the face was I wasn't going to be around too much longer. That's how severe my drug and alcohol addiction was. But again, like you say, anybody that has an addiction that's listening or to the recording, whatever it might be, you know, addictions come in many forms. But addictions aren't the end of the world, guys. You know, they are if you don't do something about it. But again, if you can look at the addiction as a wake-up call for you, as a wake-up call for you to recognize that what you're doing isn't working, then what will happen is you will have the opportunity to shift your consciousness and to really create something in your life that you've always wanted. But you got to be present to it. You got to be willing to do something in a different way. And again, I was very fortunate. You know, music is another thing. You know, it's interesting. Music has been used. There's a couple of great books out there that if people want to learn a little bit more. There's a guy named Oliver Sacks, who's written a couple of amazing books on music and the mind, and a guy named Daniel Levitan, Levitan. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called This Is Your Brain on Music. But there's been a lot of studies about how music helps you learn better, helps you retain things better, helps you be more productive. They use music with Alzheimer's patients. You know, mm-hmm. people, I'm sure your listeners heard about, you know, baby Mozart, you know, how they use music to help young children. You know, I've known a couple of my friends who have been pregnant recently. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm a firm believer about this, too. You know, what the mother listens to has a direct effect on the child in the womb.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting.
And so, you know, I was talking to a guy yesterday. It was very funny. One of the guys that works with me, and we were talking about. He was talking about his daughter, who when she was born, you know, young babies cry a lot. And sometimes, you know, they can't tell you why they're crying. They just cry, right? But he said he always would put on this one little piece of piano music every time she cried, and within a minute, she'd stop crying.
What was that music?
It was, it was a piece of music that a friend of mine, Mitch Foreman, wrote. I don't know the title of it, but again, it's true, you know. And so, you know, if you're in a funky state, you know, or if you're not feeling good about something, or whatever it might be, you know, if you put on a piece of music,
mm-hmm.
you know, that. There's a good chance that piece of music will shift your energy. You know,
mm-hmm.
it'll get you out of that funk that you're in. Okay,
mm-hmm.
it just has that ability to connect into your soul, your cellular level, and really shift the way you look at things.
That's something actually. I've been recommending to people, especially when they're hit by that kind of "I want to have sugar now" feeling, and it's like,
right. Okay,
one of the things you could do is you turn on what you're saying, you know, a piece of music that just calms you,
absolutely,
or lifts you up.
Absolutely.
So, Do you have any suggestions about about pieces of music to play?
Yours is my time.
Connie,
my music is the only music you should listen to, okay? I'm only kidding you. But I invite your listeners to please, you know, go to my website and download that song. It will help you. It's my time. Here's my take on it. Listen to whatever you like, but make sure it's positive. You know, I'm not. You know, I mean, I don't want to judge rap music or music that has, you know, incendiary lyrics to it, if you will.
I know, I know. There's a few songs that actually I've been getting into Zumba lately, and the tunes are great, and I really didn't listen to the lyrics because it's so danceable. And then the other day, one of the tunes, I listened to the lyrics, and I'm like, ew.
Right. Well, you see, that's the reaction you got because, you know, that all of a sudden you kind of, like, got present to it, and I was like, oh,
it's so fun to dance to.
Right. But so people should listen to whatever kind of music makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever that might be, whether it's success songs, the Rolling Stones, you know, Beethoven, Pavarotti, whatever it might be, you know. But, you know, I think that, again, you know, it's not that there's a, it's like a good book. You know, and when you're reading a good book, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're reading and you're kind of in another world, you know, or you get to watch a great movie, you know, it takes you out of, you know, where you might have been and transports you to into another place, and usually that other place is the place that's very soothing, very settling, and even could be empowering and motivating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's really fascinating the way you've created, you know, a whole following of people who, you know, are now using music like you to empower themselves.
It's,
do you have, like, a... Go ahead, sorry.
Do I have what?
Oh, I was just curious if you could share, like, people always love success stories.
Well, you know, I've had people call me or write testimonials to me and saying that the fact that they listen to success songs every day has increased their productivity, has increased their focus, has increased their clarity, has increased their business. I've had people, a veteran from Iraq and Afghanistan send me a testimonial and tell me that when he had my songs over there, and those songs really got him away from where he was, I mean, the art of war, if you will, and into a place where, you know, he felt he could make it through it. And then I had another vet that sent me an email where he said that when he got home from the wars, you know, he didn't know what he was going to do. He didn't know, you know, like so many veterans, unfortunately, you know, things are in such disarray for them. And he said that, you know, by listening to success songs, he found direction in his life.
Wow.
I've had mothers tell me how their children, you know, children who were sort of problem children and who, you know, they made success songs kind of a daily diet of theirs, if you will, maybe while they were driving to school and so forth, and how the kids now saying that, they, you know, can we hear those songs again? Because they make us feel good. And, you know, and they got
which
messages.
Which one in particular?
A bunch of them. You know, I mean, you know, they put the CDs on. You know,
what are the other
people,
ones, other than It's My Time, what are the other ones that are people's favorites?
Well, It's My Time, I Make a Difference, Breakthrough to Success, New Beginning.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
Today's the Day. I mean, there's, you know, Find Yourself. You know, there's a song I have called I'm a Money Magnet, which is a very fun song, which...
that's a fun one.
You know, which really kind of gets people into the mindset of, you know, success comes in many different forms, Connie. And, you know, the way that it starts to come for you is when you create what I call a momentum mindset. And you really have to be in the energy what you want to have in your life. And so these songs, you know, these songs really are designed to do that. They're very, I mean, they're it's great music, great lyrics, and they're very memorable. And, you know, again, it's the whole DNA of what you embody in your life will show up in your life. And so, you know, getting back to Gretchen, that she likes to sing in the morning. So, I mean, you know, these are the kind of songs where you'll sing them throughout your day. You'll sing them throughout your day, and they will create a vibration within you of being able to get out of your own way and really manifest what it is that you want in your life.
Mm-hmm. So if you were going to create a Kick Sugar song, what would you call it?
What would I call it? So that, well, you're going to put me on the spot here. I don't know what I'd call it, but I know what the song would be around, you know, taking care of your body.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and eating healthy food.
I mean, it's all about, you know, I always ate healthy. When I was doing drugs and alcohol, I didn't really eat much, and I don't know if I ate so healthy back then. But, you know, 22 years now, I mean, I juice every day, you know, and I'm a 95% raw, you know, so I've shifted myself. So anybody out there, you know, that's listening to this show, you know, that says they need that next piece of chocolate cake, if you want a piece of chocolate cake, go to Whole Foods and buy one that's fruit juice sweetened, okay? But, you know, there are alternatives for you to eat things that are good for you and that will not only taste good, but they will
right.
increase
your energy.
Right,
no, of course we
energy.
Know that, yeah. Yeah, of course we know that.
You know,
so
sorry. So, you know, I'll kick that around, Connie.
I feel bad. I'm sorry.
You don't have to feel bad, and I'll get back to you on that one.
I was just like, you know, I don't know. I'm reading, you know, I'm reading the introduction about all the people you've written songs for, and I'm like, well, darn.
Exactly. I hear you. So.
I need a Kick Sugar song. Actually, it's not so much Kick Sugar. It's more like a, you know, an eat healthy, be good to your body song.
Absolutely.
You know? You know, and people can be like spreading the word.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm sorry about putting you on the spot. So do you have any other tips for people who are, you know, given your background and your long, long, long years of sobriety? I mean, 22 years is like, wow. Do you have any other tips for people who are, when they're going to kick sugar, what they should do maybe first or second or whatever?
Well, you know, the first thing is always going to be to recognize that there's a problem.
Yeah,
you know,
that we got.
And so we've got to do that first. And then, you know, again, you know, think about, you know, and when I coach people, I'm big on having people do some exercises. I mean, you know, think about how you feel, guys, when you eat sugar. Okay? Think about, you know, that you don't, I mean, do you feel good? Chances are you don't, you know.
Yeah.
So think about all the things that you know, if you have continue to have this addiction to sugar, all the things that you know that are not good for you.
Yeah.
Okay. And then make another little column on this little, you know, exercise and think about how much better you'd feel if you didn't do that.
Yeah. Good.
And I guarantee you, once you can, again, the more you become mindful and aware of the circumstances around you, then you'll choose the experiences that support you. I always tell people, make sure that, you know, if you're going to choose to do something, choose in your favor.
Yeah. Very, very good point. Yeah. So, any other final thoughts about the power of music to, you know, change your life?
The final thing I would just say is that, you know, there are many things out there, again, that will help you create outer circumstances that you want, and music is one of them. So I would encourage you, your listeners, to listen to things, guys, listen to that totally will open your chakras, your energy, your heart, your soul to exactly what it is that you want to create in your life. And once you do that, you'll find that you'll gravitate back to more and more of those type of things that give you positive energy in your life.
And go
to Success Songs and download the song, and then let Connie and I know what you think about it. And actually,
Actually,
when you're thinking about, you know, using sugar, listen to "It's My Time" and just substitute "It's My Time" to not eat sugar anymore.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, very, very cool. Very, very cool. Now, you were involved with a vision board that used music. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I have a product called the Success Song Vision Board, and what that is that it's a process to create a vision board, which I highly recommend people do. But it uses music as the inspirational entry point to what you want to create. So, for instance, if you want to create a vision board around wealth, then you would listen to "It's My I've Got a Millionaire Mind" or "I'm a Money Magnet" or "Breakthrough to Success," and you get in the energy of what it's like to be in an abundant and prosperous consciousness. And you kind of do your vision board around listening to these inspiring songs with the messages that you want to do for your vision board. So if you wanted to do one about, you know, shifting your life and creating, you know, maybe a new relationship or something in your life, you might listen to "New Beginnings." But it's really like being able to, instead of like going, "I'm going to create a vision board," go in a magazine, cut out pictures, and post them. You know, this is about being able to do that, but being able to use another sense, another energy source, if you will, music, to inspire you to do the vision board.
And what is the URL for that?
You can find it on the Success Songs site as well, under this product.
And maybe mention Connie sent you. That is like amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
you know, you should become an affiliate of mine. I should become an affiliate of yours.
So, Paul, do you have any final thoughts, suggestions, comments?
Yeah, one final thought is, first of all, again, I want to say thank you to you, Connie, and I want to acknowledge you for the great work that you're doing, and I want to let your listeners know that you all should feel very honored and blessed that you have a voice such as Connie, whose best interest is yours. And I just want to acknowledge you on that.
Okay, I'm
and
blushing
last...
now. Thank
what?
You.
You're
I
welcome.
Said, okay, I'm blushing.
Right. And the last thing I would just say to everybody is just remember this. It's always your day. So make it a great one.
I like that. Very, very cool. So, Paul, thank you so very, very much for coming on the show. Really, really appreciate it. And I will be in touch with you. So thanks again.
I appreciate you, Connie. Thank you. And anytime I can be of help, that's great. And for your listeners, if anybody has any questions or, you know, if somebody's out there and wants to talk to me about maybe an addiction thing or whatever, my email, I'd be happy to give it to everybody, which is paul@successsongs.com.
Okay, cool. Well, again, thank you so, so much.
You're
so
welcome.
I want to tell people to stay tuned because we have some very exciting shows planned. There's one show, actually, that I literally just booked, I don't know, like earlier today, and it's absolutely fascinating. And there's a new book, and it's basically in which it encourages you to lose weight by using a self-compassion. And I'm like so, so excited to be interviewing. Her name is Jean Fain. And basically, she sort of tells you about how to lose weight without without really dieting. Absolutely fascinating. But you can adopt whatever it is,
whatever of her techniques that work for you. Anyhow, the book is called The Self-Compassion Diet, and she's going to be on next Monday, and we also have some other exciting shows next week, but we need to head out. So just stay tuned and keep going to gabwiththegurus.com, and you can always get the updates there for the coming shows. Thank you all again so much for joining us, and Paul, really appreciate your time too. Okie dokie.
Thanks for listening to the Gab with the Gurus radio show with Connie Bennett. Remember, you can listen to archived shows at any time thanks to Blog Talk Radio. Just go to gabwiththegurus.com. If you like this radio show, please mark it a favorite and tell your friends. Learn about upcoming shows at gabwiththegurus.com.